It's Baskin and Phelps, 216-474-0092. We are counting down the minutes till we hear that Myles Garrett's press conference. It'll be the first press conference of this new season, for as far as I'm concerned, as we go into camp. And I know that, you know, it's one of those things that keeps Dan up at night, because he can't wait for that first press conference to hear what guys have to say. It's not just people speculating over what they're saying, or people just writing various things that they heard from other people. It's the actual people talking to you when we give you these fantastic press conferences. And that's coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Right, Dan?
Real excited to be back out here. Everybody's 0-0. Our goal is to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
I'm Dan Menigan. I don't like athletes. I just like following them.
Super Bowl 60, kids. How time flies. Chris Rose is going to join us at 12:20. We will talk to Chris Rose. Pride of Shaker Heights coming up at 12:20. Jeff, as we get set to do our press conferences.
By the way, sorry. Training camp coverage powered by Classic Ford and Classic Chevy in Mentor.
There you go. Go see my guy Jim Brown out there. All right, so I went to go look at this story, and I was like, okay, when we look at the big picture of what's going on in the NFL, we all know the picture isn't very pretty for your Cleveland Browns, right? So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm looking. ESPN has a story. Ranking the top 50 NFL offseason signings, trades, and draft picks. 50 of them. 50 offseason signings, trades, and draft picks. Yes, even the NFL orchestra was excited about this story. The top 50 NFL offseason signings, trades, nice. And draft picks. Nice. Yes.
Yes.
And you know what?
Where are we?
I went through here and I was like, 50, right? There's 50 amazing moves in the offseason.
What the hell's going on out here?
The Browns surely have a few, right? We're talking 50. Every team had to make one big one, right?
You re-signed Miles. That was big.
Did not make the top 50.
You signed Kenny Pickett. Be your quarterback of the future, maybe.
Hang on. Let me check again. Let me run a search. Pickett.
Flacco? Either one?
Nowhere in the top 50 are your Cleveland Browns.
I'll be. Nowhere?
There were 50 moves.
Not just Pickett and Flacco. Nowhere.
They ranked the top 50 most impactful NFL offseason moves. And Mike Green being drafted by the Ravens was bigger than anything the Browns did at 50.
Green's going to be a good player for them.
Gray Zabel, 49, drafted by the Seahawks. I mean, they had draft picks in here. C.J. Gardner-Johnson traded to Houston, 48.
You know what the deal is?
Jackson Dart. Drafted by the Giants at 46.
Yes. I don't think he was... Oh, not drafted at 46, but he's 46 on the list of 50.
Yes, that's okay. Correct. Yes, okay. Yes. Sorry. Russell Wilson, the 44th biggest play in the offseason by the Giants.
Brian Daboll announced this morning, that's QB1.
See, well,
already
maybe,
did that before, and he just hammered it home again.
RJ Harvey, drafted by the Broncos, 38, bigger than anything the Browns did. Do you want me to continue on?
No.
Drew Dalman.
No.
Signed by the Bears, 32.
See, you know what the deal is? Who wrote this thing? ESPN, did you say?
This would be one Matt Bowen.
Yeah, Matt doesn't like the colors orange or brown.
What do you think the number one offseason move was, according to him?
Aaron Rodgers to Pittsburgh.
No, that was 19. You want to take a gander?
Oh, hell.
And maybe this will change your
Raiders
thought process.
Hiring Pete Carroll.
Nope.
I'm just guessing.
Ben Johnson of the Bears.
How about Davante Adams?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
He's going to be really good with the Rams, by the way.
That is number one.
Interesting, they flopped out Cooper Kupp and brought in Davante Adams. Davante says he's recharged, ready to go. Going up with his buddy Matthew Stafford.
The number two overall was Cam Ward getting drafted by Tennessee.
You'll have that.
We are nowhere to be found.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't like orange and he doesn't like brown.
We are hiding behind.
Put them together, he really doesn't like it.
We are hiding behind the gas mask owned by Laremy Tunsil at number five being traded to the Commanders. Hiding. They cannot see us. There's smoky cloud in front of the Browns, and no one can see us, but they can see Laremy Tunsil at number 5, traded to Washington.
The bong and the gas mask.
What does the... Oh, man.
The bong.
That is such a deep cut.
It sounds, doesn't it sound like he was about to do a reggae song? You're like...
The bong and the
lime
gas
and the
mask.
Coconut, the bong.
The bong and the gas mask.
And the gas mask. Welcome to Jamaica. I'm sorry. One more time, Ed. You got to hit it again.
The bong and the gas mask.
What was he thinking? What was Tunsil thinking? What was Schefter thinking?
I see it in Rappaport.
It's Rappaport? It sounds like Schefter. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm tearing up a little bit here. What does
certainly,
this say?
Certainly,
what does this say?
It hasn't hurt Laremy Tunsil in the long run.
No,
has it?
It hasn't. But what does it? What does it say about the Browns, man? We're like,
they don't worry about it.
They rank the 50.
Some dude had to come up with content for the, you know, for the start of the season, and he doesn't like orange and brown.
Jeff Phelps is correct, but it also says what I'm continuing to believe, which is that this year, whether we all want to admit it or not, seems like a gap year. That this year they have done nothing that would make any of us think, oh my God, we have to win now.
So you're saying we're not going to college. That's what you're saying.
Oh, you're
we're taking a year off. We're going to go
backpacking through Europe. You're staying in hostels. You're finding yourself.
I can't.
It just
why
seems
do I have
like
a feeling you actually did that?
No, I did not do that.
I could totally see you doing that.
But yeah. No, it just continues to hammer home. My thought is you saw this entire offseason play out. You saw how they operated. They didn't exactly chase massive free agents. They didn't exactly go after monster trades. It continues to hammer home, guys, that I think Barry and Stefanski have 2 years to get this thing right. And that this is year one of the two-year rebuild.
Why do you think that?
What have they done to tell me differently?
I'm just wondering, is it because... Is it because when Jimmy Haslam said what he said about a big swing and a miss, was he taking responsibility and taking that off of the plate of Andrew Berry?
I saw that one. I agree with that completely, that they just did that. The trade back, them trading back, saying, okay, we're going to load up for next year's draft in the first round, says, okay, we're going to be here to make that pick in the first round of next year.
Although that might have been something that ownership said, you know, ownership signed off on. You know,
like
to be honest, it's Travis Hunter might end up being a Hall of Famer. It's hard to find fault with that trade.
Oh, I'm going to be fascinated with the Jags and what they do with him. But yeah. I feel like we've known Jimmy Haslam enough. Does trade back sound like a Jimmy Haslam thing?
No.
No.
But it sounds like something that he had to sign off on.
Oh, yes. It just seems like they've done nothing that is an act of desperation as you watched other teams whose rear ends were a little warmer than others, or you know, however you want to put it, make moves of desperation. For example, Russell Wilson of the Giants. That screamed of our butts are on the line. We've got to do something to win some games or we're toast. You could even say Daniel Jones maybe going to the Colts. And Chris Ballard and that whole situation right there and looking at Anthony Richardson and going, oh, we may have fluffed this one. We got to win some games. How do we do that? Okay, let's go to this guy. There were different teams who may have had the same level of warmth under them who made moves to supplement the warmth.
Can we just admit
like
this, though? If this team averages 16 points per game and they only win 3 games, we're looking at an entirely new coaching staff next year and probably a new front office.
I don't think so.
I'd be surprised if that weren't the case, Andy.
I'm correct. That they.
You're going to have to win more than three.
And I don't know. It might not be an all new coaching staff. Look, let's just say they're losing games, you know, because the defense is out there for 3 quarters. I mean, you probably could still look at Schwartz if you wanted to bump him up through the system. I'm not changing coaches based on any of this stuff, but I just, I don't know. How do you come back to the fans next year and go, oh, we only won 3 games again and we only scored 16 points per
game?
Though
I said earlier in the show that I think that they're a package deal here, mm-hmm, because they've been together, and I mean Barry and Stefanski, This is year number six. Though I think there'll be a package deal, I don't think they should be. I think Andrew Berry has not put a ton of talent on this team. And I think Kevin Stefanski has just been coaching what he's been given.
I'm going to say that it's not all his fault, though. When you take three number one picks away, your drafts aren't going
to look, Andy, but they're
not going to look good.
There are 60-some players on a football team.
I know.
And practice squad and everything else. You've got a lot of guys. That's three guys. And you could have traded those down and everything else. The draft picks you did make, just not a good drafting track record. Let's be honest. I mean, it isn't. I hope that changes this year. I think Mason Graham could be really good. I actually like the trade down move. We'll see how Travis Hunter turns out. I liked the drafting of Quinshon Judkins. Carson Schlesinger, we'll see. We'll see. I like the Dylan Sampson draft pick. We'll see.
The track record
overall is not good. And that pains me to say.
Yeah, especially here we are on the first day of camp, and we're just trying to figure all this out. Chris Rose, you know him and love him. Preseason TV.
We really do.
Yeah, preseason TV for your Cleveland Browns. He does play-by-play there. John Boy Media, just a fantastic human being.
NFL Network.
Yeah, NFL Network. Coming back with him. We'll talk with Chris Rose. When we return, don't forget, coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we're expecting to hear from Miles Garrett. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. He's the pride of university school.
Don't forget that NFL Network gig.
He is the man.
Kind of a big deal.
The man everyone stops for autographs at Shaker Square. He is Chris Rose. Hi, Chris.
Christopher.
Hi, guys. Long time no chat. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. All is well.
Well, my friend, are you getting ready to make the trip back home here to get settled in for a little TV work here very soon?
Well, I'll be home for the third preseason game.
That's right.
You know, the rest of the stuff is on the road, and joint practices are on the road and things of that nature. And got a few other work assignments, but I cannot wait for this one, because if you were to line up the 32 NFL teams from most interesting preseason game storylines to least interesting preseason game storylines, I have a feeling I know who's won.
Well, NFL.com yesterday said which one was number one, because it said little training camp battles that we're watching. There is a nice picture of four guys in an orange helmet and orange jerseys.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, Chris.
It is.
Now, which one?
Well, you know, we've had this discussion all off.
Yeah, I know. Has it changed?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it has changed. I think that, It just hasn't. Now, to me, the narrative shifts a little bit now that we're starting camp. Somebody has to ask Kevin, okay, when do you need to know who the guy is? When is it best? And he might give you the whole, well, you know, it's most important that we get the right guy, not when we get the right guy, which I understand. But you need to, I would be shocked if after the second preseason game against the Eagles and after those two joint practices we have with the defending Super Bowl champs that they don't know who it is. Let's put it this way.
Agreed.
If we still don't know who it is, then maybe somebody has either jumped off the page, i.e. one of the two rookies that they really didn't expect to, or they're like, man, we really need more time to figure this out.
Why is it in the back of my head I keep thinking, can Dylan Gabriel pull off what Russell Wilson pulled off in Seattle?
Yeah.
Do you think he can?
Right. I mean, you start with obviously the stature. Now Russell was a thicker guy when he came out.
Absolutely.
And his playmaking ability, I thought, even though the first couple of years that was really all about the Legion of Boom, you know, guys have... Russell had that ability where guys would just bounce off of him, right? He would make a play, guy would bounce off of him, he'd look downfield and he'd throw it. And I don't know if Dylan Gabriel has that ability. I do think that he's got a decent arm. I've told you this, that I was down on the field for his throwing group in Indianapolis, and not everything was pinpoint, but I was more surprised about the kind of the zip that the ball had coming out of his arm there. So I am fascinated. We all know that they like what he brings from the neck up. And obviously that's a big part of playing quarterback at this level. But you also have to be able to make every throw, and you have to have that skill set. And I think that that's why Jadeur is fascinating. Maybe people didn't see him as a first-rounder. Maybe some people didn't even see him as a second-rounder. But I think a lot of people are surprised that he was still around in the fifth. And, you know, the guy deserves a chance to make the team and maybe to make a dent at some point as well.
Chris, I just felt like the team had a setback, even if you felt like there's like for fans that don't feel a lot of positive energy, you know, there was still hope, I think, especially with two strong rookie running backs mm-hmm. coming in and Quinshon and Dylan. I just, your thoughts of, you know, what do you do with the running back situation when you've got giant question marks about Quinshon Judkins? And I think it's probably fair to say that he's probably out for at least six games. I think that, or at least there's got to be a way to approach this thing. And, you know, your thoughts on Dylan Sampson. I'm excited for him, too. I was excited, you know, for both these guys together, but I think Sampson can have an impact in the league.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. And then that league's pretty good from what I hear.
That's what I was trying to tell Jeff this morning. Same thing.
Yeah.
Jeff didn't want to listen to me. Maybe he'll listen to you.
Yeah, he's new to football, so let's start off slow.
I was thrilled when they drafted him. I like that pick.
Yeah, and you do need multiple guys that can carry the rock. The Quinshon Judkins thing, I don't know where that – I can't sit here and say, well, here's where the league is definitively heading. I don't know. And so – And the Browns don't know. So there's separate sides of that issue.
Right.
There is the human side, which is important. And then there is the football side, which is the business that we all cover. And sometimes when they intersect, it becomes really challenging to talk about and discuss. So I just don't, I wouldn't even know how to go about that. He's either there or he's not from a football standpoint. What you do about the contract situation, your expectations for him as a human being and things like that, it's a separate discussion, one that's very important, but it's totally different.
I'm real curious to see what the defense looks like with Mason Graham and with Carson Schlesinger. I mean, you drafted two guys with your first two picks who are going to line up right in the middle of that football field. And I think it's a real telling sign of what the organization is thinking about this team, Chris. And to be honest, the concept, the theory, I drafted a defensive tackle in the middle of that line. I drafted a middle linebacker in the middle of that second level. I like it, but I sure hope those two guys can play.
Well, of course. They were your top two picks, so they better be able to play. And it's really important. You know, we haven't had a first-round pick since Greg Newsom. And we haven't struck gold on all of our second-round picks and our middle-round picks. And it's a little bit why the Browns are caught in this somewhat precarious situation of not having enough depth at certain spots. You know, one of the best picks we've made, unfortunately, his career is in question at this point with JOK. I actually think the linebacker room is one of the most interesting aspects of this team, because it feels like there's a lot of guys that can play at a position where I'm not going to say it's being phased out, because linebackers will never go anywhere, but to have a guy like Schlesinger who can do multiple things, meaning you don't have to pull him off the field, is enormous in today's game. When you're playing a lot of two linebacker sets, you've got to be able to fill the holes, to take on guards, to cover backs and tight ends. And he does that exceptionally well. And this is for a guy who was a zero-star recruit, essentially. Like, he had to walk on at UCLA, and he got no run until his last year. So I think the thing is, was that last season an anomaly, or is he now building up and ready to take off in the football world? The things I work with a guy in MJD who is still plugged into the UCLA program, and he can't say enough great things about that kid. So I'm super excited for him. And with Mason Graham, because he's not Aaron Donald. That's not who he is. He's not doing these insane workouts and his chisel out of granite. But what he is he's a dominant football player from Saturdays at Michigan from noon to 3, and hopefully on Sundays from 1 to 4. He just has this amazing leverage. And Daniel Jeremiah told me countless times he would watch this guy play, and you look at him, and you're like, gosh, really? Is he that good? And then he'd be the best player on the field. So that's what we need to hope for.
All right, let's switch gears here for a second to talk to the man that also hosts Dugout Discussions. Your thoughts on the Guardians being able to battle back to get to 500 and playing pretty good baseball right now. It's going to make the rest of the summer fun. It looked like for a second things were going to dive off, but they have really made a great charge in the last 11 games.
Am I a bad man to say I want Emmanuel Clase traded?
All right, well, no. My question is what do you want in return? You're not a bad man. If they get the boatload, then you're not a bad man.
Yeah, there's probably, I would say, five teams that need power right-handers in their bullpen to feel like they can win the World Series. I would say that the Dodgers definitely do. The Phillies, they signed David Robertson for like the 17th time this week, but they still need help at the back end. We would never trade him to the Tigers, but I still think that they could use somebody to pair with Will Vest back there. The Cubs definitely need him, and that's the place where I had him. We did a kind of a fictitious trade show that we did on Talking Baseball for John Boy Media, and I had Clase going to the Cubs because I think it's a perfect matchup. I think they desperately need him because they've got guys. They have four guys that they're really counting on that are free agents after this year. So Clase not only helps you maybe win it all in 2025, but you have him for the next 3 years at a reasonable number, too, if you exercise the options. And the Cubs have guys that are ready to be big leaguers. They just don't have spots for them. So we need all the help you can get lineup-wise. To me, it's a perfect fit.
So are you saying forget about the playoffs this year? Is that what I'm asking? And if you are you saying that knowing that you got Smith? I mean, you've got an unproven closer compared to the guy that was unbelievable last year. Can you trade Clase and still feel like you're competitive enough to make the playoffs and really scare the you know what out of the American League if that possibility is there?
Okay, well I'll say it this way: what do you need in order for a guy to get a save in a game? What do you need?
Three outs and a lead.
Yeah.
You need the lead, which means you need to score runs. This offense, and I get it, since we lost 10 in a row, I think we've ripped off 9 of 11. Mm-hmm. And our schedule is significantly softer now than it was when we were running into all sorts of issues.
Right.
But do you feel like this team, as presently constructed offensively,
no,
is good enough to win multiple playoff series?
No, but I'm not going to say I can't win two series before I win one. And I think they do have the pitching that might be able to get them in a situation to advance. I just don't know how far. And I can't, if you make the playoffs, you make the playoffs. So this, sitting around here going, well, you can't win two series. It's like, I can't personally live like that.
Yeah.
Give me the opportunity to get there. You know,
I do understand that. We have developed one outfielder in the last 12-plus years, and it's Stephen Kwan. One. So everybody else that's come through here, whether it's been Tyler Naquin or Bradley Zimmer or Nolan Jones, anybody else that you want to give a shot to, it has not worked. Sometimes over the last 20 years, we've been very good at trading for other teams' players.
True.
And there's a kid named Owen Casey who is killing it right now in Chicago. Now, I don't know if you could pry him loose from the Cubs, but man, oh man, I think he is going to be a great ball player, and he's ready to play right now. They just have the best outfield in baseball, and there's no spot for him. They've got four outfielders. Seiya Suzuki is great, and he's a DH every day, so they just don't have a spot for him. I'm telling you, man, from both standpoints, if I could make one trade happen, it's the one, and I get it. People are like, well, hold on, hold on. you're trading Class A. Folks, reliever, it is a finicky business. One year they can be great, and the next one they can be horrific. It happens all the time.
Take a look at the first month of this season, right?
Yeah, but to his credit, he's figured it out, and he might not be the same guy we saw last year during the regular season, but he has been really better than most still. So I'm not taking this lightly about trading him, but I do think it's something you've got to strongly consider to make this offense watchable, because for 90% of the year, it has been unwatchable.
The name that I've seen from the Cubs is the other outfielder, Kevin Alcantara, the 6'6" yeah. kid.
Yes, and he's a right-handed power bat, so yeah, it makes sense.
Both really interesting guys. With that thought in mind, Chris, what went through your head when you watched the Guardians load up on big power-hitting college hitters in the draft? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, it went away from what they've been.
Yep.
So I think that was somewhat refreshing. I do think they have to take a strong look at what they're doing organizationally. You know, why haven't we been able to produce solid major league hitters when other teams are? And, you know, they've been a really, really good organization. They've given us a lot of joy in the last 12 years, right? Ever since Tito got on, you never felt like, boy, we're lost. We might have had some bad seasons thrown in there, but you never felt lost. And I just think that if we're ever going to get past a certain stage, we're going to have to start hitting on these draft picks. You just have to. They have figured out the pitching formula. They really have. And I'll give them a ton of credit, because for years we could hit the crap out of the baseball, but we just couldn't figure out the pitching side as well as we needed to. Now we've pretty much done that in both the starting rotation with guys that I didn't think could be, you know, credible major leaguers, Logan Allen and Joey Cantillo, but they have been. They've been guys, they're not dominant, but you don't feel terrible about throwing them out there every fifth day. But the lineup guys, there's three everyday major leaguers in their lineup, and Carlos is really at the end of his line. It's Hosey, it's Kwan, and then it's a bunch of guys who deserve to be on major league rosters, but probably not playing as much as they should. You know, that, I'm sorry if people's feelings are hurt on that one, but that's the way I see it.
Chris, before we let you go, we haven't had a chance to talk yet. I thought the All-Star game was a home run. You guys did some fantastic stuff with John Boy down at the All-Star game as well. Just your thoughts on that, because it finally felt like we had an All-Star game winner, and I don't care that it came down to a home run derby or a swing off or whatever they wanted to call it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was good for the game.
I thought it was a blast. I loved the swing off.
I did,
I mean,
too.
Like, who cares? Who won the All-Star game 2 years ago? Nobody cares. That stuff doesn't...
American.
That doesn't matter. You want to... Good for you.
I'm just guessing. I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, well, there were only two teams that played. So good job.
The American League kills them, so it's like...
Oh, golly.
But yeah, I thought it was a blast. Would it have been better if Shohei and Judge had been in it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But Kyle Schwarber gave us a pretty good moment, and I thought that was neat. And Jonathan Aranda almost hit one that would have tied it up. And I would have liked to have seen Pete Alonso get some final swings to give the National League a win. But I thought the idea was right. And it's still the most watchable of all the All-Star games.
Yep.
Are there tweaks that can be made? Absolutely. But I thought overall it was a really fun experience. And I loved that the Kwani beat out an infield hit to force this swing off. I thought that was great.
Yep, guards ball. Chris, give us your agenda so we can catch up with you on your national media tour of everything you do. What do you got going on right now?
Yeah, still got Dugout Discussions that comes out every Monday on our JM Baseball YouTube channel. Every day I do a show with Trevor Plouffe, former Minnesota Twin. We have a great time. Baseball Today, we break down all the topics. We actually talked yesterday. You should go check this out on our YouTube page about Jose Ramirez and where he ranks among Manny Machado and Nolan Arenado, among the great third basemen of today. That was a real interesting one. And then I just finished. The reason I haven't been talking to you, we just brought back the show American Gladiators. And so I was teamed with another former, well, once a Clevelander, always a Clevelander, The Miz.
Yes.
The Miz was the host. I'm the guy calling the events. Our co-host is a woman named Roxy Diaz, kind of from the entertainment world. And it's going to be coming out on Amazon Prime in early 2026, and it's a blast.
Very nice, Chris. Thank you. We appreciate you. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Chris. Thank you, bud. Miles Garrett is scheduled to speak. A couple players may be stepping up to the podium. We'll hear how it goes. But, excuse me, we will carry Miles Garrett for sure for you because we want to make sure you have all the latest information on what is going on. It was an interesting offseason for Miles. There's no question about that. We'll get into that more in the 1 o'clock hour. I do want to talk about what I think is kind of a weird, wild story in college athletics. And I'm not sure how much you caught of this. I know Dan was down with this story. The Big 12 rejected Memphis's $200 million no-strings bid to join the conference. The Big 12 rejected $200 million for Memphis to come on in. This is the third time I'm reading this off of USA Today. This is the third time in the decade the Big 12 has rejected the Tigers' request to join the conference. This time, Memphis reportedly made a bid worth $200 million to jump from, which is now the American Conference. They changed their name. The American Conference into a Power Four. They want to be in a Power Four. I get it. There was also talk, and this was the line that caught my eye, too. Memphis Athletic Director Ed Scott has stated his goal for the program is to join a major conference since he took over in June of 24. He laid out two potential conferences he'd like to join. Scott would earn a $250,000 bonus if Memphis joins the Big Ten, the SEC, the Big 12, or the ACC. And then we all know the Big 12 just added Colorado, Arizona, Utah, Arizona State.
Ed's getting after that bonus money, Andy. Yeah.
And
come on, Ed.
You know, there were a lot of schools, and UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, they came out of the American Conference to get over there. So... they would like to, with a rejection from the Big 12, an attempt to join the ACC could be on the horizon for the Tigers. Memphis turned down an invite to join the reforged Pac-12. Why would they do that? Oh, maybe because he didn't have the bonus? I don't know. If I was Memphis, wouldn't you have hopped into the Pac-12 deal? That's where I would have gone.
Pacific 12, Memphis.
Stop worrying about things like Big Ten thinking there's 18 teams in the Big Ten.
I forgot college football, college athletics doesn't exist anymore.
$200 million rejection. Like, could you imagine walking away from $200 million? I guess $200 million doesn't buy you what it used to.
Well, not when you charge all those kids all that tuition. You got plenty of money coming.
Stop being so silly and thinking that education and athletics are interconnected. When are you going to let that go? When are you gonna? It's just a convenient way to play for somebody these days.
Oh, Pollyanna.
Gotta have some beautiful tulips in front of every building on campus. Those aren't cheap, man.
Little Billy might miss the Rose Bowl this year because he's behind in his geometry class at Ohio State. Oh, boy. And little Billy's teacher is not happy.
Little Billy can't go to the Rose Bowl because he can't afford a plane ticket because he's in debt up to his eyeballs trying to pay for that degree in communications.
That's right. I don't know how maybe. You know what? Let's give him a little stipend. How does $20 million sound, little Billy?
Oh, now see, you took it from just a struggling college kid to some guy who's able to be a long snapper
Jeff, how can you only go to college by making $20 million a year? Seriously, how do you survive like that? I mean, you're going to have to go thrift shopping
I see stories like this Memphis story, and I just think, good Lord, please.
Good Lord that that college athletics is so bad?
That there's so much money involved, and you're right. I can't separate the idea that, you know, this, it's two different things. College and, you know, legitimate people going and trying to get a degree so they can get a job and go make an adequate living, as compared to kids who are there on, let's even forget college scholarships. Those don't matter anymore.
Well, they matter to the kids that have them that aren't playing athletics.
The NIL money and everything else. It's two different things. But it's still under the banner of the fill-in-the-blank university, whatever it might be.
I mean, the word amateur just doesn't mean it. Okay, so just I think it's easier right if you just that. Eliminate the word amateur, right? Just eliminate it. Now, does it have a refreshing feeling? Athletics there in schools? Amateur doesn't matter anymore. So now we've disassociated that. And why do we feel like because you're in college, you have to be underpaid or zero paid, right?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I'm just saying that I think we associate athletics in education as this harmonious thing. That's what it should be. But guess what? Maybe it never has been, and maybe it never should be. Maybe we should just understand that people that play athletics at the highest level in some of these colleges, which, by the way, is a very small percentage, that if you are blessed enough to be able to play athletics at the highest level and to be compensated for it, that's just the way it is. You're not only are you a university employee, but you are also an employee who's being educated at the same time if you choose to. If you choose to, because they want you to take classes and
be a part of
it.
Well, in theory, they're
going
to have to stay eligible, aren't they?
Yeah, but what does that mean? What does eligibility mean? The NCAA still has clearinghouse, and you still have to have some academic requirements to get into these. I mean, they are allegedly institutions of higher education, right? Isn't that what their business is?
But the business model is throwing the word allegedly, because that might not be what they are anymore. That's why you threw it in
for a small percentage of players.
You're a smart dude.
Well, but it's still for a small percentage of athletes. I still I feel bad for these high school kids coming out right now because, this is about transfer portal more than anything, But I do think it does. Maybe it strengthens the athletic hierarchy at the next level, where you're getting higher quality competitions at NAIA, at Division III, at Division II, right? Maybe it strengthens that. I just don't know why. The question of down the road is, why does a university want to be involved in athletics?
Okay? Money.
It's money, and it's filling the dorms. Isn't that what it's really all about?
Yeah, with people who are paying.
Yeah. And participating in athletics, same thing. So, all right, well, we had our little nice discussion there.
Good for Memphis,
good effort. Let's see what happens with the ACC. $200 million
to spend.
We'll see what's next.
Go join.
Talking Browns next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. We're going to head out to Bree in the next hour.